going on, everybody? And thank you so much for joining us here again on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, sitting beside me, it's mi amigo Big Fizzy.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in studio, in Skeleton Studios here in Weatherford, Texas.
I appreciate the gift, Brad.
Oh, yeah. Sipping on. Now, my sphere of influence has now spread from just fizzy water to just overall water. Everywhere I go on my travels, I go into different gas stations, convenience stores. If I see a new type of water, I buy it. I mean, I've had all types, and it's pretty cool. Some of them, I'm like, really? Tastes like
water,
tap water. And then some of them, I'm like, wow, that's it's quite refreshing.
That's some high-quality water.
But yeah, so I always come to the studio with new waters for Cam to try out.
So I've got Liquid Death Mountain Water here.
Yeah, very tasty.
It's pretty good.
They got fizzy water, too, made by them. It's pretty good stuff.
And then you also can never – this is what kind of friend I got. This is why my friend's better than y'all's friends. Look, this fella shows up today for the show, and he has something in his arm, and he hands me. And he goes, dude, I pre-order this. And he hands it to me. I got the new Dungeons & Dragons book.
Yep.
It's Ravenloft, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the new one about Ravenloft.
Yeah, yeah, we had to look. Like, wait a minute. Yeah. So thanks, Brad. You're all right in my book. And look, thank you to everybody else that's been sending all the messages about Kyle's dad. So, yeah, the human cockroach. Lay up the update, Brad.
Yeah, he is fine and well. He's officially been released. When they left the hospital, they sent him to a rehab for like 3 days. And just to work on his leg to get his strength back and walking. But he has been released. He is chilling right now in Bayville, Toms River, New Jersey, at his sister's house. He's been out since Sunday, so he's been home about 3 or 4 days. And he's going to be chilling up there until Friday.
And then he comes home.
And then he comes home. And he's ready to come home. But yeah, no, he's...
They're sending a retrieval specialist to bring home the human cockroach.
Yeah, I got to fly up there on Friday to help him out. My mom said, hey, do you mind coming up and helping us out? Between your father and the dog I've got with me, she's got a little Yorkshire Terrier. She's like, I'm a little bit frazzled. And besides, your father doesn't listen to me. He only listens to you. The only reason he listens to me is because I bribe him with, like, gifts.
Cigars. Man, you can get that man. You could commit a murder in front of him. Of course, he's not going to say anything, and I know that's the obvious joke, folks. But literally, hand him a couple of cigars,
yeah,
he'd be fine with it. He'd be like, poof, yeah, it's whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure that person had it coming. Speaking of someone who didn't have it coming, I found a story here, folks.
Oh, before, I was going to say, before you get into that, one more thing.
Oh, what do we got?
You need to talk about the grandbaby. I know people have been asking.
People are going to go
You're
crazy.
You're officially a grandfather.
I'm 100% officially a grandpa. This is true. I have a granddaughter, and she is pretty much the greatest thing that I've ever got to hold. I was blown away. Look, everybody talks about it becoming a parent. I became a parent very, very, very young, right? So I was a dummy. Like, of course, not like I'm much smarter now, but I was real dumb. Like, so when you're a young parent, you kind of like, it gets lost on you.
Right.
You're just in the struggle of raising kids, right? Everybody's going through it. People are going through it now. It happens. But when you wear these glasses of grandparents, it's a different level. It really is strange because it's like you take in everything. It's just another tier of really, as silly as it sounds, another tier of love. It's a very strange thing. And I never thought I would be like, oh, my goodness. But I am. I'm pretty much like, oh, my goodness. So, yeah, it's wild. But, yeah. Yeah, her name is Emma. And so we have a little baby Emma with us now.
That's good. And everybody's healthy and feeling good, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I hope that she acts worse than my son. And by that, I mean my son has like no, he never gets in a hurry. He's one of those people that is perpetually like on his time and his speed his entire life. So he has no sense of, and I don't know, he gets everything done, but he's just one of those easygoing guys. I hope his daughter is worse than that, so it drives him crazy and makes him late to everywhere he was trying to go. Yeah, that way, turnabout would be fair play. That'll make me happy.
Well, I know a lot of people have been sending me private messages wanting to know, and I was like, yeah, dude, as far as I know, everything's good.
Everything's great. Yeah, she's fine.
Well, good.
So it's something else.
Well, yeah.
And I think we're all coming over to your house Sunday, so
okay,
buckle up for that.
Yeah, sounds like fun. We'll get a picture together with everybody,
yeah,
the
sure.
whole Expanded Perspectives crew. Maybe Mary can
And I guess we need to go ahead and tell everybody, too, that we're working on merch. We actually have something done that we're going to be releasing probably next week.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Make sure you're watching it on Facebook. We'll have it on Facebook, probably put it in something on, of course, on Instagram. And we're going to be doing a pre-order on a certain summer attire. So, yeah, so get ready for that. But here's something you're not ready for. This took place. Like, I got this from our homie Lon, and I thought it was funny because of just the date it all went down. And it's a very interesting thing, and I think it fits great with Philly. This took place about 5 years ago, folks, on June 23rd. It says, my son and I visited Silver Dollar City Amusement Park in Branson, Missouri. We were having a great time, despite that I had occasional pain in my upper left arm. 2 days before, I had suffered a fall at work and sustained a deep 5-inch laceration, which required 24 stitches. Now, the trip to Branson had been planned, so I decided to keep my promise, and I just went anyway. My son wanted to ride the Wildfire, which is a roller coaster-like contraption where they strap you in because you're traveling upside down at times during the ride. Well, I wasn't too thrilled, but I had to accompany him since he was too young to go by himself. So we're strapped in the seats, and I'll tell you, my arm was aching because it was a drop-down shoulder harness. So we started off, and I was enduring the ride. But after going into the second loop, well, I went totally blank. I only remember coming out of the corkscrew and leveling out at the end of the ride, and I felt okay but was confused. I thought that I may have fainted, but my son didn't seem to notice anything. So we got out of our seats and walked off the ride, and as we continued walking towards the next attraction, I noticed that I felt exceptionally well, and I didn't have any pain in my arm. So I reached inside my shirt and touched my upper left arm. There was no bandage. In fact, I didn't feel any stitches or even a wound. I was so shocked that I almost fell to my knees. Now, we stayed at the park for another half hour and then headed home. After I dropped my son off, I made a beeline home and into the bathroom. I looked in the mirror. There was no laceration, no mark whatsoever. What had happened? And on Monday, I went to my doctor and I showed him my arm. I had received the stitches in the hospital, but my doctor had the admitting report from the emergency room physician. It was right there in black and white. The doctor didn't say much, but I could tell that he was wondering what had happened. But what could he say? I just shook my head and told him what happened at the park. He still didn't say anything other than, well, stay well. Now, my ex-wife thinks I'm lying, but my supervisor at work saw the wound, and he's simply dumbfounded. He had to file the accident report and has no idea how to proceed. Now, I didn't know what to tell him, but this is why I'm writing you. Is it possible that I experienced an off-world event or something similar? I don't believe in ET or alien abduction, but I have no explanation for this. Is it possible to talk? Thanks for reading. MM. And Lon had gathered that up,
man,
a while back. And it's one of those things, look, we talk about this, those time slips. Maybe it wasn't an abduction. Maybe it was some sort of overlap. I don't know. I have
them in a parallel life was injured, and the person in this life isn't.
Has the memory
of it, but not the actual physical laceration.
Yes.
Are there stitches and stuff?
Or somehow they flipped. They still have the same memories. I don't know. See, that's what makes this so weird. Is it an alien abduction?
Maybe.
Is it an abduction that happened on a moving roller coaster for only a few seconds?
Maybe that roller coaster was like really fast, like 88.8 miles an hour fast, right, and they somehow slipped into a parallel dimension. I don't know. Maybe the aliens, look, we always assume they're up to no good, but maybe they're kind and gentle, and they zipped him up, got rid of the cut, got rid of the stitches.
I don't know. It just freaks me. That story, any of those time slips like that are wild. But when you have proof now of something prior, and then you come back and it's not there, you know, that to me is a solid proof that there was something went down there, and the physicians have got it.
The medical notes indicate that they received stitches.
And I wonder how many times this happens and people just don't bring it up. The doctor doesn't think anything of it. They're like, I don't know what, maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought, you know, or whoever was, whatever it is. And we scoff a lot of stuff off every day, every week of our lives, every month at just coincidence or that's funny or that's strange. And maybe we just need to keep better notes of it.
I agree. Speaking of keeping notes, we always talk about on this show when somebody has a sighting or something like that, that we lend more credibility to somebody who's a trained observer, like a pilot, or in this case, a police officer. Well, we've been talking about this a lot lately. Check this out. This police officer and his wife were driving, and they when they were going over a bridge, they encountered a massive winged humanoid.
Wait. Right? Recently?
Yes, check this out. Right. This happened a couple years ago. It says, I live in Toronto, but I have a lot of family in the States, and one of them claims to have actually seen the Mothman. He said it was a creature unlike anything he had ever seen before. It was covered in hair with leather-like skin from top to bottom and had a terrifying screech. He and his wife were driving home from a night out, and just before they were about to cross the bridge, this thing sweeps down from the sky and lands right in the middle of the road. He said it was around 11 o'clock at night, and there were no other cars on the road. But the weirdest thing of all is that his dash cam instantly malfunctioned, and when he tried to play it back, all he could see was static. He was both excited and terrified at the same time, because he's been hearing about the legends for years, and he couldn't believe he was actually having an encounter with it, but was so angry when he noticed that the video didn't record. He said it was working perfectly up until the moment this creature came from the sky and landed on the road in front of them. As soon as whatever this thing was flew away, the recording, you guessed it, returned to normal. Which leads me to believe it's a paranormal entity, as they are well known for interfering with electronic equipment. Now, he didn't dare report it because he thought people would think he was crazy, but I'll never forget that phone call. He called me first, even though I'm just a distant relative. But I could actually hear the fear in his voice. And his wife, I could hear her sobbing in the background. He told me that this thing looked like it was absolutely massive. Its head, arms, and legs basically were humanoid type and shape. It had no neck, just like Cam. It was unbelievably huge, and it had yellow, reddish eyes that seemed to glow in the dark. He claims it had a wingspan of at least 10 feet. I assure you that this guy is not prone to exaggeration or for making false claims of any sorts. As a matter of fact, he's a police officer. That's why he didn't report it, because he said they get dozens of fake sightings every year, and his colleagues are always joking and laughing about it. But now that he's had an experience for himself, well, he doesn't want to be the butt of any jokes. He's hell-bent on figuring out exactly what this thing was, even though it didn't hurt them. He said it did appear to be incredibly intimidating, actually walking towards the car as they just sat there in panic. He said a few seconds felt like an eternity, but eventually, as the creature was around 10 feet from the hood of his car, he started honking his horn and flashing his high beams, and that seemed to do the trick. He said as this thing flew away so fast, it was gone literally in the blink of an eye. This happened some time ago, yet he has only told myself and two other family members about it and refuses to tell anybody else for fear of being labeled a conspiracy theorist, especially given his career. But I believe him. He's an upstanding citizen, an absolutely brilliant man who actually has 3 master's degrees, a man of science, who has never believed in anything unusual or paranormal. So I know that he's telling me the truth. I just wish that he was able to get a video of it. But after the description he gave me, it makes me glad I'm all the way here in Toronto. I would not want to run into that thing at 11 o'clock at night with anybody else around. TJ. So here again, we have a sighting. Up in the north Midwest area, it's, you know, by Michigan, Toronto area. I think Toronto is like right across from Detroit. But like, it seems like a lot of, for whatever reason, up there in Chicago, Detroit, Toronto, areas like in that vicinity, there's a lot of these winged humanoids.
True.
For whatever reason. So I'm wondering, why is it that area? Or is everybody seeing the same one? Like, what is it about that area
that draws them to it?
Yeah.
That is weird. while you were reading that, and I was thinking about what they were talking about, how it shut off the camera, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we all, there's endless stories about that, about where, you know, the camera messed up, the microphone messed up, something messed up, and it's got to be a frequency that causes that. Makes me wonder sometimes, like, you know, there's certain spots that you used to always laugh about. These are dead spots where they don't pick up any radio transmissions, and it should be there. Like, and I'm not talking like way out somewhere. I'm talking like in a city sometimes that there's just a dead spot, right? Where you just, you know, every time you go by this certain area, you're going to lose a phone call, or maybe on the middle of a road. Like, you and I know that there's one south of town here that you can go. I've often wondered if that's really not something there. If it's some, if you could use those spots where there should be coverage of anything, but it doesn't, you can drop a radio phone call there, or I mean a radio signal there, or your phone call get dropped. If there's something there where it doesn't make sense for it,
mm-hmm.
if that could be a telltale sign of something paranormal, if that could be used as things to where these don't make sense, these little dead spots, but we have them off and on, right?
And if there's more cases of paranormal sightings in and around those zones?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's possible, right?
Or is it roving? Because, you know, like, you've been driving along, like we've talked about, you'd be going up to New Mexico or Colorado or anywhere, and you'll lose signal sometimes, but not for very long. It's just whoop, and it's within 100 yards, 200 yards, and then it's right back. You just hear that disturbance. Well, what caused that little minor disturbance right there?
Magnetic fields, ley lines, things like that.
It makes me wonder if there's not more to that.
Possibly. Very, very good question.
Just
I don't know either. What I do know is we're about to take a break, and after the break, I'm going to be talking about some alien abductions. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Today's show, today's segment, was inspired by a listener story that was sent in to us from a guy named Lewis. And it brought up a lot of questions about the phenomenon. And the phenomenon I'm talking about is the one that has to do with alien abduction. This has always been a topic for me that's been interesting and also terrifying. I mean, throughout time, UFO sightings can be traced back to the days of prehistoric man or ancient rock art of spacecraft, mysterious symbols, of course, crop circles, and non-human, non-animal creatures that can be found painted on cave walls in several spots across the world. There's been an overwhelming number of encounters, but only recently have they been given the attention they deserve. UFO abduction stories, alien contact, have poured into mainstream sources for decades, and those who claim that these experiences often find themselves the brunt of social mockery. And I think that's exactly why a lot of people don't come forward. But because of the popularity of podcasts and things like that, it seems like more and more of these people are coming forward. You know, the times are a-changing, they would say. With more and more of these videos from the government being released, of these strange UAPs, that's what they're calling them now, moving around and coming and going, and people have even spotted them going in and out of the ocean. Pretty crazy. It seems like more and more people seem compelled to come forward these days and tell their story. Not just ones of seeing something strange in the sky, oh no, but something far more complex, perhaps sinister. That's right, being abducted. Being taken against their will by some unknown group, perhaps from somewhere else in the galaxy. Who or what are they? And of course, what do they want? On today's show, I'm going to be sharing with you an incredible story that was sent in to us from a guy named Lewis. Let's begin. Well, you might be asking yourself, when it comes to alien abduction, how did this all begin? Well, it was with the Hills, at least reportedly. On the night of September 19th, 1961, Barney and Betty Hill were driving on a rural highway
to their home in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Now, by all accounts, the Hills were an exemplary couple. Barney was a postman, and Betty was a social worker. They were both active in their community and within the civil rights movement. On an isolated road snaking through the White Mountains, the couple later recounted that they saw a bright object that appeared to be following their car. They arrived home around 5 a.m., unable to account for 2 hours of the night, but feeling that something terrible had happened to them. It took a while, but the Hills eventually remembered the life-altering event that befell them on that lonely stretch of highway. They'd been abducted by aliens. The Hills' claim was the first publicized account of alien abduction. Their story, which they told first to a psychiatrist and then in a book and TV movie, formed the template for countless abduction stories to follow. Now, details vary, but the typical alien abductee hews to the basic script of the Hills' self-reported encounter. They are taken by otherworldly beings, subjected to various experiments, and then returned, never to be the same. Today, some 2.5% of the U.S. population reports having some personal experience with alien abduction. Studies by sober-minded, non-ufologists, psychologists have identified two truths that apply to most in this unique group, including the Hills. Number one, they're not lying, at least not consciously. Most people who say they were kidnapped by aliens really believe they were kidnapped by aliens, even if the evidence doesn't support their claim. And they're not crazy, at least not in the way we think of when we talk about crazy people, though they tend to differ from the rest of the population on some key psychological traits. These self-reported abductees are participants in a cultural myth that can be directly traced to Barney and Betty Hill, whose own story came about only after aliens started kidnapping people in movies and TV plot lines in the late 1950s. Reports of flying saucers surfaced in the late 1940s. Aliens were fixtures of science fiction by the dawn of the 20th century. But the trope of real people actually being spirited away by such beings is only as old as the Hills. They were the very first to report such an act. But who really knows how long this has been going on? If you're not familiar with the Betty and Barney Hill case, well, I'll give you the short version. The night was cloudless and starry. This was according to them. The Hills stopped for coffee at a roadside diner around 10 p.m. And they figured they'd get home around 3 a.m. The couple recounted in The Interrupted Journey, a 1966 book about their experience, which was co-written with John G. Fuller. According to them, they then got back in the car and continued home. Sometime later, Betty looked out the passenger side window and saw a bright object following them. After her insistence, Barney parked the car. He got out and looked at the object through a pair of binoculars. The object was, in fact, a spacecraft, with a set of double windows through which Barney claims he could clearly see at least half a dozen living beings. They were wearing uniforms, and they were looking straight at him. At this point, Barney was terrified. He raced back to the car, pulled off the highway onto a winding side road to lose the craft. The couple heard a series of loud beeps, and then each felt an odd tingling drowsiness come over them. Fuller wrote, followed by a sort of haze. When they regained consciousness, they were 35 miles down the highway. They were groggily, and they continued on their journey home. At first, there were only a few oddities. Both of them were a little rumpled. Barney's shoes were scuffed, and his binocular strap was now broken. He had a feeling that something had happened to his body. He went into the bathroom to examine himself. He tried to shake it off, but couldn't. And a few days later, Betty began having nightmares. Barney eventually told a friend that he was feeling, that his feeling was one of a person who saw something he doesn't want to remember. 2 years later, the couple visited a psychiatrist. There, under hypnosis, they both recounted what occurred that night. Short gray aliens with big wraparound eyes took them aboard their saucer-shaped craft and probed them with needles. The psychiatrist didn't believe their story, though he could see that the Hills clearly did. Barney, in particular, was terrified at the recollection. Betty was more comfortable sharing the story with friends and others, even giving lectures about her experience at schools and to other local groups. Journalists started sniffing around, and the Hills agreed to a book deal. In 1975, NBC aired The UFO Incident, a made-for-TV movie based on the Hills. In the 2 years after it aired, reports of alien abductions, the thing never recorded in human history before Betty and Barney Hill, rose 2,500%. Right? So clearly it had an effect on people. Now, is this because there were copycats? People just flat out lying about their experiences? You know, wanting to sell a book or two or appear on a television program where they can play the victim? Sure. Absolutely sure. For some portion of those people, they're clearly just making it up. But what about the other people who experienced similar things but kept their mouths quiet for fear of ridicule? And there is one more frightening possibility at that high number. Perhaps actual alien abductions were increasing. Which moves us to the listener story that I want to get into. Now, this story took place in South Carolina. Check it out. Hello, Kyle and Cam. I'm a big fan of what you two do and your incredible laid-back way of presenting the strange and unusual to the world. I found out about your show about 3 years ago while reading a book on a paranormal journey around the U.S. In this book, the author mentioned a few podcasts out there for anyone interested to go and check out themselves. So, I did. And there was about 4 or 5 shows recommended, and I have to tell you, I liked yours the best. Enough brown nosing now. I have debated writing down and telling anyone my story for quite a while now, but I feel it's necessary to get it out there. A few shows back, a person wrote into the show and expressed that they too wanted to get their story out there before it was too late and they passed away or something. That hit me pretty hard, and I knew right then that I needed to do the same. Now, I don't think I'm dying anytime soon, at least I hope not, but I do think my experience is worth sharing just in case. My experience, well, it's a bit hard to talk about. It literally has changed my entire life and has had a huge impact on almost everything in my life in one way or another, since that event. This wasn't recent, so let me take you back to when all this took place. My name is Lewis, and I'm from a small town in South Carolina called Whitmire. I was born in 1957, so I'm currently 64 years old. I was part of the baby boomers generation in a small rural area in the Deep South. I had the typical childhood from anyone growing up in and around that era. I was a country boy, so I did the stereotypical things that country boys did. I played a lot of sports, like baseball and football. I did some hunting, and I did a whole lot of fishing. You see, I love to fish. Still do. My home was a Christian one, and me and my folks almost never missed a Sunday service. I was raised with less than an open-minded pair of parents. I never, and I mean never, heard anyone talk about the paranormal. No ghost stories or any creepy crawlers, and definitely no stories about aliens or UFOs. But the same can't be said about my friends. When I was around one of my friends in particular, I was around 10 or 11 years old at the time, he had some amazing comic books and magazines called UFO Flying Saucers. I remember looking at the cool cover art and reading the interesting stories inside, never once thinking that one day I would have an experience, something I would have trouble talking or even thinking about. So, it was then that I became really interested in UFOs, aliens, and thinking about the real possibility of otherworldly beings traveling the expanses of space and time to visit us here on Earth. Well, as time went by, I grew up. I thought less and less about the subject altogether. I stopped reading comic books and magazines and started chasing girls. Just after high school, or finishing high school, I met the love of my life. Her name was Jackie. We dated for a while and eventually got married and raised a beautiful family. But my encounter happened before we were married. We had been together around 2 years when the summer was approaching, and we had wanted to do some camping and fishing together. You see, I lucked out because Jackie loved fishing too. She was a welcome companion on many of my fishing trips. So, we started excitedly looking at some good places to go camp and fish for a few days, just the two of us. We did some asking around, and pretty much everybody told us that we needed to check out an area called Croft State Park, just outside Spartanburg, South Carolina. So, we did some investigation and decided that that would be a place that we would go. We would try it out. Even if it was good or bad, we would have a good time. So that's what we did. We packed up the car and headed off to Croft State Park to camp and fish for 5 to 7 days. We weren't really sure. Kind of depends on the weather and how the fishing was going to go. Well, we got there and pleasantly we were surprised. The place was great. It was fantastic. The surroundings were beautiful, and Lake Craig looked very promising. We had a small aluminum John boat with us that we could do some of the fishing out of, and needless to say, we were very excited. We selected a campsite way out away from everyone else. There was no one really there. We set up our stuff, made up ourselves a few sandwiches to eat, and to take it all in. The spot, like I said, we selected was far from any other camper. We hardly saw anyone at the park at all, so it was perfect. We were in heaven. This is just the way we liked it. We wanted to be alone. After dinner, that first night, we climbed into our tent and went to sleep. We awoke early the next morning and had a fantastic day of fishing. It was the perfect day. Again, as the sun was setting, we cooked some ham and eggs in a skillet. Yeah, we pretty much ate breakfast for dinner. By the time we were finishing up, it was already pretty dark outside, and while I was cleaning some of the pans, Jackie was commenting on how beautiful the stars were in the sky. So I began stargazing myself, both of us just there, taking it all in. There was hardly any light pollution, and the stars looked amazing. That's when we both noticed something strange. She saw it first, I'll admit. She said, "Lewis, do you see that orange-looking star?" "Lewis? Lewis?" Now, the reason I wasn't answering is because I did see it, but I knew what it wasn't a star. I don't know how, but I did. Instantly, all of those magazines and comic books from my youth came flooding back into my mind, and I knew first that it wasn't a star because the thing was moving around. It was zigzagging. It would then hold completely still and then start moving again. I told Jackie, "That's not a star, babe." And she said, "Well, then what is it? A plane, perhaps?" I told her that I didn't know. Now, of course, I didn't want to tell her that secretly I thought it might be a flying saucer. I really liked this girl, and I didn't want to ruin things by making her think I was crazy. We watched it for about 15 or 20 minutes, and then it just kind of disappeared. After that, we talked about other stuff for the next 2 or 3 hours and then turned in for the night. The next day came, and we did some hiking on some of the local trails. Again, it was another great day, and me and Jackie were having just the best time. As the day started winding down, once again we made dinner and a fire and did some more stargazing. All of a sudden, we saw the same orange orb we saw the previous night. Jackie excitedly said, "Lewis, look! There it is again! What is that?" I saw it again too. And again, I told her I didn't know what it was. Kind of a white lie. All of a sudden, the object stopped moving around, and it started to grow in size, or at least that's what we originally thought. After watching it for a minute or so, I realized it wasn't growing in size. It was approaching us and our campsite. It was coming towards us. This thing descended over Lake Craig and hovered over the surface of the water about 100 feet or so. I have no way of actually knowing the altitude, but there was an old water tower near my house at home, which stands at 116 feet, and this looked very close to that height. It was about 4 or 5 football fields in length away from us, and it just sat there. No sound, nothing. It was completely quiet. No crickets, no cicadas, or anything else. Suddenly Jackie said, "Lewis, is that a flying saucer?" And I nervously said, "Maybe. I don't know." Well, this thing sat there for about 2 minutes, and then it shot off into the air very quickly, making absolutely no sound. That was it. It was gone. Surprisingly, Jackie didn't seem that frightened by it. She more or less seemed excited. We talked about it for a while, and then again went to sleep. Around 3 a.m., I woke up in our tent and saw a small glow coming from outside. I thought that maybe our campfire had flamed up again. I tried to ignore it for a while and go back to sleep, but I couldn't. I could hear something outside of the tent moving around. Stepping sounds, scurrying sounds. It's hard to describe, but I could tell something was in our campsite. I thought that maybe Jackie or me had left some food out and some raccoons were getting into our supplies. And I needed to get my flashlight, put my shoes on, and shoo them all away. So, that's what I did. I first found my shoes, put them on, tied them. Then I felt around in the dark tent trying to find my flashlight. I eventually found it after looking for a minute or two. I tried to turn it on, but nothing happened. I was confused. I had just put new batteries in it before we left to come out here. I had used the flashlight earlier that evening and had no problem. This was one of those old metal flashlights from the 70s, the kind that looked kind of like a lightsaber. So I banged on it a few times, took the old batteries out, put them back in, but nothing. As I was doing this, I could still hear multiple things moving around in our camp. Only light, faint sounds, but I could hear it. By this time, Jackie woke up and said, "Lewis, what in the hell are you doing?" I told her that I heard some raccoons and I think they're in our campsite and messing with some of our stuff, that I was trying to get this darn flashlight to work so I could scare them off, but that I couldn't get it to work, and that she should just go back to bed. She reminded me that on the tree by the fire pit, there's actually a Coleman kerosene lantern. And I was like, "Oh yeah, I'll just use that." So just like that, not really concerned about what was happening, I unzipped the tent and stuck my head out. What I saw forever changed me. The orange glow I saw from inside of the tent that I assumed was our campfire just flaring back up was not our fire at all. It was the large orange orb from earlier. It was back, and this time much, much closer. This time, it was only 50 yards from the tent and only about 15 feet from the ground. Again, it was completely silent and was spinning in a slow counterclockwise motion. The colors were swirling, too. They were all various shades of orange, but they were clearly moving. It kind of looked like videos of the sun's surface, but there was not any heat. At this point, I must have been in shock. I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. I just sat there in awe. That's when something was moving to my left, towards the picnic table, the one with our food and supplies. What I thought were raccoons were something completely different. What I saw were 4 to 5 small, thin children with no hair. Only slits for mouths and large, black, almond-shaped eyes. They appeared to be rummaging through our belongings. But I couldn't understand why these odd-looking kids were out here in the middle of the night, in a remote camping spot, going through our gear. But before I could try to compute what I was seeing, one of them noticed me noticing them. It stopped and produced a wand of some kind, a small, thin stick, like a baton that a conductor of an orchestra would use. That's the only way I can describe it. This being moved to me very quickly and put this wand to my forehead. And that was it. White. That's all I remember, white. Like a really bright camouflage. Everything went white. The next thing I remember, Jackie was waking me up on a trail. I was lying in some tall grass, and the sun was hot and warm. It was like 1:15 in the afternoon, and Jackie was screaming at me to wake up. To wake up! I was starting to come around, and I felt like I was still drunk or hungover. Jackie was there with 2 park rangers, and they were offering me some water. I was confused. I was trying to make sense of what was happening. Jackie was visibly shaken and was happy to see me well as being really pissed off at me at the same time. She just kept yelling at me, "Lewis, where the hell did you go? Where did you go? Why did you leave me all alone in the tent?" I was like, What are you talking about? I didn't leave. Where am I? What is going on?" She said, "Lewis, you woke me up in the middle of the night. Don't you remember? And you told me that some raccoons were messing with our stuff. And you said you were trying to get the flashlight to work, but you couldn't. I then told you about the kerosene lantern, and you told me to go back to bed, which I did. But you never came back. I woke up at 6:30 or so, and the tent was wide open and unzipped, and you were nowhere to be found. I got up, I got dressed, and started screaming and yelling your name. I thought maybe you went fishing without me, but all of your stuff was still at camp. The lantern was still hanging on the tree by the campfire. The flashlight was still in the tent. I looked for you all around the camp. I looked for you, Lewis, for 3 hours, yelling your name, but I couldn't find you. I didn't know what to do, but I was starting to get worried. So I went to the park ranger station, and I told them that you were missing. They told me not to worry, and they began helping me by asking me exactly what had happened and where we were and stuff like that. And as she was starting to tell me all of this, the 2 park rangers were standing there, shaking their heads in agreement with Jackie's story. They told me that they found me off this trail, roughly a mile and a half from our campsite, face down in tall grass. They said that I didn't have any shoes on, and that my shirt was inside out and on backwards. They wanted to know what kind of drugs I was doing. I told them, "Drugs? I didn't take any drugs. I was just trying to scare away some raccoons, and the next thing you know, I'm here, on the trail, talking to you guys." Needless to say, we were both freaked out. And I didn't tell Jackie about the giant orange orb and the odd-looking children for about 10 months. I was different once we got back home. Not depressed, but different. After a while, Jackie asked me, "You know, what's going on? What's going on with you? Was there something that you wanted to get off your chest? Was there something bothering you?" And I had to be honest. I told her, yeah. I told her everything. And she just listened. I don't think she believed me, though. I don't think she ever did. She just listened. She never judged me, but told me that she thinks I must have had a really bad dream and that somehow I must have sleepwalked to where they found me in the tall grass. I don't know if she truly believed that or is too freaked out to consider the possibility that I might have been taken by some strange extraterrestrial visitors. I've tried to speak with her about it many times over the years, but she always just tells me to stop. My children have tried to talk me into seeing a clinical hypnotherapist to try to recall what happened during my missing time, but I'll be honest, I'm too scared to find out. I've lived more than 40 years since my strange encounter, and I don't want to bring up old memories. Me and Jackie are still married. We still live in South Carolina, in Charleston now, and we still fish from time to time, mostly with grandchildren. But I can tell you, I still think about that night almost every time I go fishing. I don't know what to think about the whole thing. Was I a victim? Or was I lucky because I was chosen? I don't know. But I know that we're not alone. I hope you enjoyed my story as much as I enjoyed the podcast. Take care and keep them coming. Your friend, Lewis. Wow. That is an incredible story, Lewis. Thank you so much for sending that in. Really appreciate it. There's several things in the story that I find cool, like how you described them as being children because you didn't really know what the grays were at that time. I liked how the flashlight wouldn't work. This is common. When UFOs get close, for whatever reason, electronic devices just don't seem to want to work. I really don't think you need to go see a hypnotherapist. I don't think you need to recall what happened from your description in your story. I'm quite certain you were abducted, and it is probably best that they somehow erased your mind and that you probably don't want to bring that back up. It could ruin the last couple of good years you got left. But anyhow, I love the stories of alien abduction. They're very creepy, but as like we talk about quite often, we just assume they're sinister. Maybe they're not. Let's take a break, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Back with Expanded Perspectives.
Pow.
There's been a lot of talk recently about these videos that the government is acknowledging now as they are coming from an unknown source. They're saying that they're not theirs, but they don't know what they are or where they're from. So with the government now admitting to all these things that have been considered like conspiracy theories, you know, aliens.
Air quotes.
Roswell, all the stuff. You know, everybody listening to this show is a big fan and knows about all the stories. You have to, if those are real, then you have to, one would only assume that the abductions are real as well. Not, of course, not all of them. So it makes you wonder, like, what in the world is going on? What are these people seeing? What are they experiencing? What do they want? Are they here for nefarious reasons? Are they here just simply trying to monitor and study? What's going on? I mean, there's all types. Everybody knows the gamut of things from ancient aliens that they're actually, there are creators to people that are simply visiting here from another planet to people visiting us here. Those are us in the future coming back in time. I don't know. But it's quite obvious to me that aliens are real. They've been coming here. Who knows how long they've been here? They have taken some people. Alien implants are real.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, this is not just fiction. And I don't know what's going on. I don't know if there's something you can do to ward off an abduction. I don't know if there's something that people are doing that's causing the abduction. I don't know if it follows a family lineage. I know that there are lots of reports where this has been going on in one family for a while. So, like, the grandfather experienced it, the father, now the son. Are they doing that on purpose, or is it complete coincidence? I don't know. But needless to say, I think it's terrifying no matter who's abducting you, whether it's just some creep trying to sell you into the sex slave or it's an alien from another world trying to test out your genetics. I don't know.
Well, I've got something here that you're talking about in the lineage, and I want you to – y'all get a load of this. Sean sent this to us in an email, and it's from Reddit, but it says, I'd like to share my dad's story. I would like to share my dad's story to see if anyone has had something similar occur. He's used to people not believing him. I used to not believe him. And now that he's getting older, I would like to validate his experience. It was 1970, 71 or 72, in Brownsville, Texas. It was a summer night, and he was sleeping at the house of a relative. An incredibly bright light shining through his window woke him up. Now, he walked out into the backyard, and a round object very high in the sky was shining the light so bright that he could barely see. Now, he remembers absolutely nothing after that, but woke up curled in the fetal position 2 or 3 days later. He lost sense of time and doesn't remember how long he was sleeping. His relative assumed he had left town to stay with someone else. And he is, at this point, convinced that he was abducted because he's lost several days, was not on drugs, and felt off. After all this, that it doesn't feel traumatic, but he feels different. Now, a few years later, he moves to a small town in southern New Mexico, and there joins a club where other people believe that they were abducted. And it goes on to say here that there is a wealth of stories from the 60s and 70s of people having been abducted or unexplained experiences all through southern New Mexico. And one of the women in the club was drawing a picture of the object that she saw in a dream. And it was the exact same object my dad reported seeing. And this woman shared the exact same story as my father during the same timeline, and also that she had lived in Brownsville, but that she, when this happened, and that she had always thought that this was just a very intense dream.
Wow. See, what's the possibility?
The odds, the right. Odds of meeting them together in New Mexico, all the way from Brownsville, and then talking about having this happen and it being the exact same.
I think they were both abducted.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and probably were together on the same ship.
It sure seems that way.
There are stories where people talk about being abducted and being forced to procreate with someone else and then meeting that person later.
Yes.
And they kind of knew. It's strange. It's very strange.
It doesn't make sense.
Well, and some of the abduction stories, they talk about human beings being on the ship.
Yeah.
Not other abductees. I'm talking like generals working with the Greys.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, but then again, it goes into the territory like we've talked about with, what's his name, who did the documentaries, the Montauk Chronicles, where...
Garantano.
Yeah, they were purposely dressing up as aliens.
Yes, yeah.
To try to mess with you. I don't know. It's a strange...
It is extremely weird. And now that all the stuff that they're releasing, it doesn't really tell you anything.
No.
They tell you exactly what we already knew. They don't know either.
You know, weeks ago, I had mentioned how I think it's a much bigger deal and that how we should be shocked and talking about it. But the more and more I've thought about it is maybe the reason no one's really talking about it is everyone already believed that aliens were here.
Nobody's shocked?
Nobody's shocked. Everybody believes it. Like, yeah. Like, if you told me such and such was arrested for DWI, and I would go, yeah, that makes sense. Right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not a shock. That's why people are just, it's just kind of blowing over. Because everybody's
already
onto
something.
I don't know. Well, if you have any stories you want to share with me and Cam, please don't hesitate. You can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can also call the show, 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. For all of our American listeners, it's going to be Independence Day this weekend. Please be careful. Make sure you drive safe. Get a taxi or cab or an Uber or Lyft or something if you've had too many wobbly pops.
Yes.
Have fun with fireworks. It's always a good time to have, you know, play with explosives. Try to come back with all your digits intact.
Try. Especially your thumb. If you're going to lose one, don't lose the thumb.
Yeah, that's a tough one to go without. But yeah, I hope everybody out there has a good weekend and is safe. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.